If you were here this morning, you will know that we looked at that passage, the first passage, the one that Sue read, some of those words from there, to love one another. We looked at that briefly this morning and thought about the way in which love is expressed in different relationships and what it means when we think about the idea that God, that Jesus demonstrated his love to us. But we're going to look at that in a bit more detail this evening. Just to paint the picture of what's going on here, Jesus and his followers are sharing a final meal together. Well, a final meal together before Jesus is crucified. They get together, they eat after that. But the last meal they share together before he is crucified. Judas, one of his closest followers, had decided to betray him, to hand Jesus over to the authorities. And he's just left the meal. He's gone out into the night to do that. And Jesus turns to the remaining disciples and he speaks about what's going to happen. He refers to his death in powerful terms as he speaks about it, that it's going to glorify him as he glorifies God through his willing sacrifice. And the fact that he's going to die means that he's going to be physically separated from them, initially for a few days until his resurrection, and then a few weeks later, forever, as he returns to heaven. He was still going to be with them through the person and presence of the Holy Spirit, but it wasn't going to be the same. And with that realization, he turns to them and he encourages them, he commands them to love each other in the same way that he has loved them. As far as I can see, the only times that Jesus is recorded as directly speaking to his followers about the need to love each other is in these two passages that we read earlier, in John 13 and in John 15. It's the only time, as far as I know, that we find Jesus really focusing on that as he speaks to his followers. John 13 to 17 is sometimes referred to as the final discourse, the final words of Jesus before he goes to die. And they give us an insight into that last meal that they shared together and what went on. It includes a powerful demonstration of love as Jesus washes the feet of his disciples. It includes Jesus telling them something about what's going to happen in the next little while. It tells them that God's Spirit is going to come upon them and is going to teach them what they need to know. He's going to remind them of what Jesus has told them. It includes in chapter 17 a wonderful prayer that Jesus prays to his Father about what is going to happen and about his followers and about us. If we go to the end of that prayer, Jesus says, I don't just pray for these people who are around me, but I pray for all who will come to believe on me. And just before he dies, Jesus prays for us. It's a wonderful portion of John's Gospel. And four times in these chapters, Jesus calls on his followers to love each other in two groups of two. As though Jesus is really trying to emphasize the point, I want you to hear this. I want you to understand it. It's as though Jesus is saying, I want you to love one another. Even the same Greek words are used in all four cases. So they would have heard those words repeatedly as they listened attentively to what Jesus was saying. If they missed it the first time, and they heard it the second time, and as it was repeated the third time, they would have thought, he's trying to tell us something. We're supposed to love each other. And I was just thinking about this. I thought, well, okay, yeah, it's important, but why? Why bring the subject up now? He's just going to go and be crucified. There's maybe many, many things he wants to tell them. Why is this one of the important things that he wants them to think about at that time? What does he want them to understand? We don't know. We're not told. But we can speculate. And speculation is good sometimes. And when you think about it, while Jesus was with them, while he spent those 3 years in public ministry, he was clearly their leader. He was the one who provided direction and context and inspiration for everything that they did. He was the one they looked to. And the key thing they had to get right was their relationship with him. If there were things they got wrong, if there were issues between them, he was there. And he was able to sort things out. And we, as we read the stories, we find examples of this. There were times when they argued among themselves. Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? They once got into a big debate about. And Jesus was there to bring them back to a proper relationship, to show them what it really meant to live as his followers. When they got the wrong idea about something, a couple of his followers didn't like how they were treated by some people, and they said to Jesus, can we bring fire down from heaven to get rid of these people? Jesus said, no, that's not what it means to follow me. And Jesus was able to say, actually, no, that's not right, and set them on the right path. When there were issues or challenges against what they were doing, those focused on Jesus and not on them. They could sort of stand back a bit and let Jesus take the criticism or the attack or the flack or whatever it was. But all that was about to change. Jesus was going to go away. He was going to go to the cross. Then he was going to go to heaven after his resurrection. And they were going to be left behind to carry on his work, to tell others about him. My grandfather, my mother's father, was a really significant influence on my early years. He died when I was 21. Let's go with 21. Might be 22. That sort of time frame. He was very involved. He was very instrumental in my journey to faith. I had a real respect for him as a devoted follower of Jesus. He'd worked hard all his life. He was a farmer. He put so much effort into all the things that he did. But his commitment to Jesus was of primary importance in his life. As he grew older and was able to do less and less physical work, you could go into his room and you could see him sitting hour after hour in his big chair with his big Bible, reading, making copious notes all over it. He was totally committed to serving God. And he was recognised by many as a spiritual mentor and guide. At his funeral, there was a sense that his sons and my father as a son-in-law were particularly going to have to face up to the fact that this spiritual leader had gone. And they were going to have to go forward without him to advise and to encourage. And in a much more significant way, this was what these first followers of Jesus were about to experience. The one that they'd clustered around, the one who had been at the centre of everything for the last 3 years, was going to go. And they had to carry on the job. And there were issues and challenges which they were going to have to face. They didn't have any idea about them at the time, but as we look at the stories that are presented in the Bible, we get an insight into what they were going to have to go through. And it was going to be vital for them to be able to respond to those things from a circle of love. One of them, just the following night, was going to deny even knowing Jesus. When Jesus was on trial and he was accused of being a follower of Jesus, he said, I do not know this man. How were the others supposed to respond to this person who had denied their Lord? Okay, they ran away, which might have been worse, but what do you know? You know, how would they respond? One was going to doubt their testimony that they'd seen the risen Jesus, doubt that Jesus was alive. How were they going to respond to him when he refused to believe the reality of what had happened? It would have been easy to reject, to get angry with them, but Jesus calls them to love. Later, they faced many more problems as they took their first steps in living as followers of the risen Jesus. Some of them were beaten for proclaiming the name of Jesus. Some were imprisoned. One of them in the early days was killed. Others were later on. They had to engage with serious questions about what it meant to live as followers of Jesus. And sometimes they disagreed as they tried to work out what it all meant. And in all those situations, and in many more, they needed each other. They needed to stay close to each other. They needed to love each other. And for that love to make a difference. And so here, as he prepares to leave them, Jesus commands them to love. Whatever the situation, whatever the circumstances, whatever the disagreements, they are to love each other. Jesus does not say, love each other when things are going okay. Jesus does not say, love each other when you're all agreeing with each other. He just says, love each other. And this is so important to the church today, both globally and locally, that through the disagreements we will have, through the challenges that we face, this commandment to love deeply and sacrificially is so important. And in both of the passages we read, we get a different emphasis, a different insight into what is meant, a different understanding of what can be achieved by this simple but challenging command to love each other. One of the first things we see when looking at these words in John 13, 34 is that they are not presented as an optional extra. He gives them a command. They must love one another. A new command I give you. Love one another. He's not saying, if you've got nothing better to do on a Tuesday afternoon, I'd like you to love each other. He's saying, love one another. Jesus, as their recognised Lord and Master, had the right to tell them exactly what he expected of them. It was their duty, it was their responsibility to be obedient and to do what Jesus told them to do without question. That was the relationship that they had. And as we, in turn, recognise the authority of Jesus over our lives, it is important that we take these commands seriously and be prepared to live them out. Jesus speaks of giving them a new command, which on the face of it seems rather strange. The command to love each other had been around for an awful long time. We were reminded of it last Sunday morning when we thought about the importance of loving our neighbour as ourselves. We find it clearly called for in the Old Testament. Leviticus 19, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbour as yourself. So in what way is the commandment new? I think we get an answer to that in the second part of what Jesus is saying here, that he wants them to love each other in the same way that he had loved them. Jesus, when he came to earth, when he was here on earth, redefined what loving people really means. He showed great love in even coming to earth in the first place. He showed love through his life in the way he engaged with others, the way he cared for others. He showed love as he willingly offered himself as a sacrifice on the cross. This is what is new. The quality, the depth of the love that Jesus demonstrated is a quality of love that had never been seen or experienced before. Imagine that you've been driving cars for 30, 40, 50 years, whatever it might happen to be, but they've always been old, falling apart, unreliable. And you are suddenly given a new, brand new luxury Rolls-Royce, substitute your favourite luxury car, for your own personal use. It's not that you haven't experienced driving before, but this is driving in a totally different sense to anything you've known before. And the sort of love that Jesus is calling his followers to is a totally different level of love, beyond anything they have ever known. It is loving each other because of how much Jesus has loved them and what he has done for them. In this study guide for last Friday, we were reminded of some words from 1 John. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. That's the new definition of love. And so these followers of Jesus, he's saying to them, they were to be a new community brought into existence through the sacrificial love of Jesus. And they are called to love each other in a way that models that type of love. He isn't asking his followers to do anything that he hasn't done. He's calling on them to follow his example. We are called to express this type of love as a response to how deeply Jesus loved us. And it's interesting and important to note that Jesus here is talking about love within the community of God's people. He's not saying to these followers, I want you to go outside and demonstrate this love to other people that you meet. He's saying, you as people who have chosen to follow me, I want you to love each other. Yes, we are to show the love of Jesus to those outside who don't yet know him. But that isn't what Jesus is talking about here. He's saying it's going to start at home. And because we love each other in this way, because we love as Jesus loved, people will see and know that we are following Jesus. We live in a country where more than half the population, I struggle to keep up, might be 60, 65% of people, would claim the label Christian. But for many, it doesn't indicate any relationship with Jesus at all. But they contribute to the rest of how society sees Christianity, which can result in it seeming bland and insipid and meaningless and unattractive. We have an opportunity to show what is really involved in following Jesus, completely and wholeheartedly. And it starts by developing and demonstrating real sacrificial love for each other. And then people will start to get a sense of what it really means to follow Jesus, of the life-changing difference it can make. And they may want to be drawn to find out more for themselves. So Jesus commands us to love one another so that people will know that we are his disciples. But then in John chapter 15, he presents it from a slightly different perspective, where he again commands his followers to love each other in the same way that he has loved them. And he speaks about the greatest demonstration of love that is possible to show, that of being willing to lay down their lives for their friends. If we look at this passage carefully, we see that Jesus isn't here calling his followers to do that. He isn't saying, you need to go and lay down your life for your friends. But he's saying, that's the bar. That's what you need to be prepared to do. That's the ultimate cost. The clear implication is that if that is the limit, then anything short of that is something we ought to be prepared to do as well. What are we prepared to give up for our friends, those who live with us in this community of faith? A few minutes of our time, completely focused on them and their needs. And Rachel was reminding us this morning of the importance of when we spend time with people to actually be there for them and not to get distracted with other things that might be going on that we might be thinking about. Are we prepared to do that? Are we prepared to be drawn away from something we want to do so that we can support and encourage somebody else? Are we prepared to help financially those who are struggling? Are we prepared to take risks that might be costly for the benefit of others? How far are we prepared to go? If being prepared to lay down a life is the bar, how near to that bar are we prepared to go? And as I say, Jesus is not here explicitly calling his followers to give up their lives for each other. But that call is made elsewhere. Picking up again that verse from 1 John that we were asked to think about on Friday, the complete verse actually says this. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. Here the call is to be willing to hold nothing back, not even our lives, for the good of our brothers and sisters. And the writer goes on to spell out a practical implication of that. If you're prepared to give up so much, he says this, if anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. And if you read the Epistle of James, you see something similar, where it talks about the way in which we demonstrate our love. We demonstrate our faith by what we do. If we see a fellow sister or brother in need, and if we have the ability to do something about it, and we do nothing, we are not demonstrating the love of God. Words are easy. They cost little. But are we prepared to act in love and compassion as Jesus did for us? I think that's some of what Jesus is driving at. But I think when he speaks about his followers being prepared to lay down their lives, he may be hinting at something more. You remember, Jesus calls on his followers to pick up their cross and follow him. Carrying a cross in those days was a clear sign that you had been convicted, you were being taken out to be executed, your freedom was gone, your life would soon be over. And Jesus calls on us to follow his steps in love and sacrifice. Just as Jesus was willing to be crucified for us, so our carrying a cross has implications for how we act towards others. It encourages us not to focus on our own priorities, but to focus on the needs of others, just as Jesus did when he offered himself for us. Part of our cross-carrying journey involves offering ourselves to those who share that journey with us, to those who are part of our community and those who themselves are following Jesus, carrying their crosses. As we demonstrate love and care to each other, we're really showing what it means to follow Jesus. We're really showing what it means to associate ourselves with him. The final time Jesus uses these words in this gospel are very simple. John 15:17. This is my command. Love each other. He's called on them to love as he has loved. He's called on them to love to demonstrate that they are committed to following him. He's called on them to love without holding anything back. And now he restates that command, having outlined some of its deep and powerful implications, and simply says, love each other. Can you imagine being there, reclining around the table with Jesus, with him having previously washed your feet, listening to Jesus explaining what love really involves and what he expects of them? Can you imagine looking at him as he speaks these words, having him look directly at you as he speaks these words into your heart and mind? How would you have responded to that call from Jesus? How are you going to respond?